Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on, it doesn't die. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. Jared, it's been one hell of a start to the T20 World Cup. Six games in, the underdogs have had a solid chance at winning each of those games. In each of those six games, I suppose, the weaker sides...
And bolted it up every time.
Yeah. They had like moments where they were ahead, and yet we've gotten the expected result each time. So I suppose... This is definitely a first.
it's interesting, isn't it? I know a lot of people have been trolling Ashwin for his views on how boring the start of the World Cup would be. To be fair, it's been anything but boring. It's been some really interesting cricket. But yeah, the teams haven't quite got over the line, have they, at the moment? So it's kind of one of those things of like, well, you know, we've said if there's going to be massive upsets, we're going to try and do lives where we have people available. And so far, we haven't quite pulled one off, but everyone's talked about it.
I mean, it's funny that every time one of these games is going on, we're preparing for the emergency podcast, and we haven't yet recorded an emergency podcast. So I suppose that is quite hilarious. But let's see when we get our first upset thus far. Expected results in all six games. Let's start with discussing the last game of the day. Sri Lanka have managed to defeat Ireland by 20 runs if they've gotten their first 2 points in the game. Slow pitch in Colombo, not much turn, but... You know, the conditions were quite slow. It wasn't easy to hit through the line. And ultimately, I suppose Sri Lanka's spinners were just better than Ireland's. And I suppose Ireland's power game also was kind of lacking, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think the spinners, it probably helped the Ireland spinners more than it did Sri Lanka's spinners. And I thought Ireland spinners, they kept one of the best players against spin in the world down to about run a ball for most of that time. The issue really was, over 17 and 19? Is that, do you remember those? Is that, have I got the numbers right? I think it was 17 to 19.
Yep.
Where Humphreys comes on and bowls a terrible full toss that gets hit straight up in the air and should be caught. And somehow Curtis Camphor runs past it. Two balls later, McCarthy gets a top edge over his head, runs in the wrong direction and almost falls over trying to get to it. And then, George Dockrell almost throats a ball on the boundary that he should have caught really, really easy. Next over, Adair bowls a good over, so they pull themselves back into it a little bit after that last one went for about 20, I think. They pull themselves back into it, but then drop the catch again. So that's four drop catches in about eight, nine balls at this point. Adair gets hit for a boundary, which is fine. And then McCarthy comes on and bowls... Everything. He bowls head high full tosses. He bowled a wide at one stage that missed leg stump by 3 foot. And then him and Lorcan Tucker said, but the batter's moving. And it's like, yeah, but you still bowl, you missed leg stump by 3 foot. Like, the batter can't move that much, guys. Like, maybe just focus on what you need to do. And he'd bowled two legal balls, Behram, and they'd gone for 16 runs at that point. And by the time they started taking catches, which they did at the end of that over, he ends up taking, 2 for 18, 2 for 19 in an 11-ball over, McCarthy. Yep. It was terrible. And that was it. They went for 52 for 2 in three overs. And at that point, I thought they were about a 40% chance of winning. For me, it went down to about 25% chance after that little section. They did pull it back, especially when Hasaranga was first injured. I thought they pulled it back a little bit. I had no issue with Adair going out to him, although surely the message had to be to Adair, he's probably not going to bowl again. Just defend this on the leg side and then try and hit Dustin Chandakar for six sixes. But for me, that's really where it went. I actually thought Ireland got the better of the conditions. The power batting that you're talking about was fine. I just don't think it was a wicket to hit for power, right? So you had to stay at the rate and above the rate, and they couldn't do it, right? There were lots of shots being played by Adair and Sterling early on. They just couldn't get the ball away. And once Chandakar, did he steal two or three overs?
Chandakar bowled two overs and went for only 12 runs. Didn't take a wicket, but 12 runs and two overs is a great effort for Chandakar, right? Which is why I was like, those were the overs that Ireland really needed to cash in on.
I mean, I don't want to be rude here, but Ireland have grown up playing Dustin Chandakar balls. They have seen Dustin Chandakar bowlers their entire life, right? They are more than aware of anyone in the world. They are the most aware of what Dustin Chandakar is trying to do and what he's going to do. To let him go and get away with those two overs when we didn't even know if Hasaranga was going to bowl again at that point. I just thought that was the bit where they just crept behind the rate again. I really like Lorcan Tucker and Harry Tector, but one of them had to come off today and they both got a little bit stuck. Usually Lorcan's a guy that comes off. Didn't quite happen. And then Lorcan goes out before Tector, which I thought also caused a bit of an issue. But yeah, honestly, I see what you're saying about the batting and the quality of spin. Ireland wins this game if they take any one of the first four catches offered to them in that 17 and 18 over mark, right? I mean, they just... sorry, I shouldn't say they win the game. They get a lot closer, and they possibly... I mean, they might have actually just won the game if they had
done
that.
Mean, if there was to be a headline, which there will be inevitably, I suppose you'd have to coin it in the sense that Ireland only have themselves to blame, and all of those dropped catches have cost them the game, right? There were seven in total. I counted them. You know how I am with these things, right? And I also counted the half chances. So Ross Adair dropped Kamal Mishara early on 13, when he was on 13 in the power play. And in that same over, when Mishara was on 9, there was a cotton bowl opportunity for Barry McCarthy. So this is just in the power play, right? After that, Jared Kusal-Mendes got four chances. Not one, not two, not three. He got four chances. Dropped on 34 by Curtis Camphor. Then on 38 by McCarthy. On 42 by Ross Adair. And then again on 53 by his brother, Mark Adair. Kusal-Mendes should have been out at least once in those four times, and he goes on to score a 39 ball 50 and what? An unbeaten 56 of 43. So that's pure fortune for Kusal-Mendes.
And it's worth saying that I think Estelle put this up in the group. They didn't hit a boundary for what, 10 yeah. overs at one stage in there. And so the ideal batter to have out there is the guy who finds twos and runs really hard and does everything else. So Kusal-Mendes, of all those players, is the guy that you needed out. Having said that, he didn't really do a lot of damage towards the end. And a lot of those drops, I think one of the ones you talked about early on, was it the McCarthy one? That was very few bowlers in the world are going to be able to catch that. And Barry McCarthy can't field, and it was smashed back at him. I don't expect him to catch that. And a lot of the other drops are actually in that period that we're talking about when the game was sort of more on the lot, when the game was sort of, Mendes had done his job and you kind of wanted the other guys to come in and hit a little bit. But even having said that, there's nothing you've said that isn't right. Like, he kept giving chances and they kept missing them. But by that stage, he had done the majority of it.
Well, there was one catch that was really crucial, which was dropped. Kamindu Mendes was dropped by Dockrell on 14 when he should have done better on the boundary line. And Kamindu Mendes was Sri Lanka's best batter, 44 of 19. So he added 30 more runs in basically no deliveries. And I feel like Ireland just imploded at the death, right? Which they are calling the finish overs. What the fuck is wrong with them?
Well, Ireland were.
Yeah, I suppose. Okay. No, not Ireland. The broadcasters are calling them. The broadcasters are calling them finish overs. Even Russell Arnold.
They're trying to rebrand them because it's too negative to say death.
I don't know, but finish sounds sexual. Anyway. Are they orgasming in those overs?
Are they from Northern Europe? I wondered if there was a little bit of dew, right? And I asked my friend Jake, and he said, look, there was maybe a fine layer of dew at the end of that innings. But Mark Adair bowled a back-of-the-hand slower ball bouncer, right? Like, I just don't think you do that if it's dew. So I don't think dew was the thing. They had fielded brilliantly. How many times did it look like Sri Lanka was going to hit a boundary and Ireland had just stolen the boundary away from them? And they went from that to looking like they all had, you know, fins for hands, right? They were headbutting balls. They, you know, Curtis Kaffer ran past these. It was such a bizarre
thing. That really was. Also, if you think about it.
And they were panicking. They were clearly panicking. Humphreys panicked. I would say they made another mistake too, Baram, just to add to it, in that McCarthy shouldn't have bowled the 19th over. That had to be an over of spin. And I think that Tector got away with one early on. I would have just gone with Tector again. Even if he goes for 12s, that allows you then the ability to use Delaney or Humphreys again right towards the end. I mean, maybe it wouldn't have mattered because Humphreys just went for runs as well. But I felt like, for me, that felt like the ideal situation where you bowl spin right to the death.
I agree. And I was quite shocked as well. I was like, okay, you've gotten away with the Harry Tector over. He's just given 5 runs. Surely you can give him another one over here. And the pitch was very, very slow and the outfield was sluggish as well. So even if you do connect, it's not like the ball is racing away to the fence, right? So that, I agree, was an error. You earlier, though, mentioned that you thought that Ireland or Paul Sterling called the right or made the right decision at the toss where he elected to field first. I think he should have batted first. If you know that the pitch is progressively going to get slower, then you might as well bat first. But you see that...
Yeah, but I don't think it did get slower. That's what I'm saying. I think if you go back, look at Tikshana when he first comes on the ball. It's actually skidding through, and Lalage skidded through. Now, I'm not saying that he called it right. I didn't actually say he called it right. I said they got the better of the conditions. I thought if Mendes had faced, even the Sri Lankan spinners in the second innings, there's no way he would have been tottering around at a runner ball the way he was in the first innings. You know, none of the island spinners even spun the ball once, right? And Sri Lanka could not get the ball away for a boundary. So I don't think that happens in the second innings. I did think it skidded on a little bit more. Even when you talked about the sluggishness of the outfield, it didn't look sluggish when Adair was hitting the ball, right? Now, maybe that's just because the man is an absolute beast and it's all power with him. But I felt like the conditions did just quicken up on the pitch and even in the outfield a little bit for that second
inning. I mean, the Irish spinners mastered the art of bowling straight, right? But just again on the dropped catches, when you are dropping potentially seven or at least 4 to 5 straightforward chances, then you're not going to set up yourself for victory. And I personally thought to myself, all right, Ireland are doing really well over here, because Sri Lanka, after a good power play, a decent power play where they score 50 for one, they really slowed down, Jared, as Estelle said, from the end of the power play to like the 16th over, 15.3 overs. There was no boundary. At the 10 over mark, Sri Lanka were like 68 for two. At 15 overs, they were 95 for four. And from there on, they managed 163 for six in 20 overs. So in those last five overs, they put on, 68 runs, losing just two further wickets. And as I said, Ireland just literally implode over there. And
52 for three in three overs, it was. Basically. One stage. And that's the difference. Honestly, I thought, what did Ireland end up on?
Ireland ended up on 143. They were bowled out at 143, 19.5 overs. And you know what? I was tallying the phases. They didn't have as good a power play as Sri Lanka. They were 45 for one compared to 50 for one. But they were ahead at 10 overs and 15 overs. You know, at 10 overs, Ireland was 72 for 2. At 15, they were 113 for 3. So it's just the death overs bowling and fielding that cost them the entire game. And of course, there is obviously a gulf in quality as well. Like, as well as Ireland spinners did bowling straight. And I mean, I thought George Dockrell was now more of a batter than a bowler. And he rolled back the years and took 2 for 17 and a catch as well, and well, dropped one. So removing Nisanka and Ratnaike, so those are two big wickets. Nisanka is Sri Lanka's best batter. Ratnaike was in form. I was quite surprised at him. And Delaney, I've seen him do well recently. 1 for 24 for him was also good. But yes, I do believe that this was a game that they very well could have won had they just restricted Sri Lanka to, if not 140, then 150 tops. And it was doable.
Well, as I said, I think the pitch changed. And so they got to 143, right? If they kept them to 150, they're probably in this game right until the end. And they weren't. It fizzled out, right? So who knows what could have happened. Can we talk about Ratnaike's dismissal for a moment? How would you discuss Ratnaike's dismissal? What's the best way you could explain
it? He was trying to make sure that his eye line had the ball above it. I think that's the best way to describe it.
He was trying to limbo a spinner. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it. It's the old nipple ramp shot, but off a spinner. But the only way he could play it was by literally limboing backwards. And then I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that before. Get bowled off the spinner and then fall over as well. Like, the whole thing was just absolutely bizarre. I mean, Sri Lanka wasn't completely on their game. We haven't talked about perhaps the biggest thing for this whole series, which is that Hasaranga injures his hamstring on his first or second delivery. I actually think he hurt it on his first delivery and tried to go through, and the second one he realized it was worse than he thought. It's his right hamstring is what Estelle told us, which basically means that if you're a wrist spinner, you're trying to push that hip through. So the right hip is the one that you're trying to push through if you're a right arm wrist spinner. And so he couldn't push it through. So he was bowling and basically stopping in his action. Adair gives him a wicket. And then he goes, and then his second over it looked like he might actually not be able to bowl again. And good on him for coming back and bowling again. But my guess is, by the way he bowled and the fact that he bowled when he was hurt, is I don't think they're expecting to see him again in this tournament. I feel that, I think if it was a grade one hamstring strain, it's probably a 2 to 3 week injury. And looking at him moving, it looked like maybe potentially a grade two, which is, 4 to 6 week injury. That's it. That's the tournament, right? And if it was a minor strain, I would have thought they would have said, don't bowl again. We'll get through this one. Don't worry. We'll work it out, skipper. The fact that he came out worries me quite a lot, but eventually it was his wickets that kind of, did he get out Tector or Tucker towards the end? He got one of them out anyway, didn't he? And helped them win the game. But yeah, I'm very, very worried about that. I don't know how you felt, but he wasn't bowling like himself. He still ended up with decent enough figures, but he certainly wasn't bowling all that well. He ended up with three for. How did he end up with
three? I mean,
three
it really is remarkable.
He got camphor, that's right, as well. Yeah.
It really is remarkable that Hasaranga on one leg still managed to clean up Ross Adair and ended up with figures of 3 for 25. And I mean, he was evidently struggling. I personally did not think he would come out to bowl again, but you make quite a lot of sense, given that if it's an injury which has ruled him out of the T20 World Cup, then might as well win Sri Lanka this game, which he does labour through and takes those three wickets. Look, he is probably Sri Lanka's most important player in this team because he's an elite spinner, world-class spinner, and he can bat as well. He's essential for balance as well, not just the fact that, you know, he's going to bowl four overs and provide some depth with the bat. And their World Cup chances hinged on Hasaranga's form. If they lose him, even in the group stage, like, they still have to play Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe could be a very, very tough game for them. They've lost to them twice recently, right? So I think they'll be definitely breaking a sweat over there. Kudos to him for laboring through and kind of getting that 3 for 25.
Yeah.
And I personally love the guy.
3 for 25. It's ridiculous. If you watched him bowl and you didn't know what the results would be at the other end, you would have thought he would have got like none for 60. There were some balls where I was like, looked like a grandpa trying to get through the crease.
I mean, he is, you know, such an energetic bowler anyway. Like right from the point where he starts his run-up, till he delivers the ball, there's a lot of like power-packed energy over there, and you just couldn't see it anymore. He was kind of stopping halfway through his action, and I felt the pain as well, and you could tell that he's pretty dejected, but he still manages to get 3 for 25. However, moving forward, how does Sri Lanka replace him? It's a big question mark, because this is a team that already struggles with its fifth bowler, right? And now they're going to have to find a fourth bowler.
I don't think the problem is bowling. I think Jeffrey Van Isay is bowled pretty well against England recently, and I think he can replicate some of the bowling. He's maybe he's what 90% as good as Hasaranga, but he gives you something. The issue is that it's the batting and the captaincy, right?
True.
You know, or not captaincy, leadership, captaincy, like, you know, strategy, having someone out on the field who knows what they're doing, you know, all these sorts of this is a man who's just played a lot of T20 cricket, right? And I know Shanaka is technically the captain, but if you're watching the actual game at times, and you've been watching them at recent times, Hasaranga is a captain in his mind, probably more than Shanaka is, right? And then it's also the experience. He's played a lot of league cricket and everything else. So it's like leadership, strategy, and captaincy, even if it's not as the lead captain. And then on top of that, then you've got the batting. I know he's not a great bat, but again, he means that you've got some batting coming in. With him and Welalage are such a good combination because they both give you a little bit of batting, right? So they give you flexibility and everything.
But there
else.
Is depth, so, although I'm not sure how much quality there is in that depth. Today we saw Welalage, that's actually how you pronounce it, I think. He came up to bat and that experiment failed. He did do well with the ball though. He took 1 for 28, I think. So I feel like he could still be used in Hasaranga's absence, but they'll have to rely on Jeffrey Van Dessay. I suppose they need a frontline spinner over here, and that does shorten.
I'm just assuming, because he played against England, didn't he, in bold, and I thought
that would shorten their batting, though. They would go with a 7-4 formation as opposed to an 8-3 formation, and that does matter. And Welalage and Shanaka, I know Shanaka can still like hit big on a good day, but Welalage I see as more so of a bowler, right, as opposed to a batter. And he was good today. I thought he was quite disciplined for his 1 for 28, but I'm not sure if he can also be another power-hitting option in that batting lineup.
He had a game against England, didn't he, where he came in one day recently and hit 40 off 20 or something. Look, he could do it. I mean, to be honest, they're not getting a lot out of Hasaranga's batting anyway at the international level, are they? So it's just that it changes the lineup, as you said. I think it's more the lineup construction that gives you an issue now, because if you bring in Van Dessay, as you said, suddenly you start to think, and they've got a lot of guys who like lean towards anchors at the best of times, and it's like you don't really want them to look at the batting order and be like, oh, look who's coming in at number eight. You don't want them to Evan Goldbust themselves, and I think they're a team with a high potential
They're a team that, despite having batting till eight or Hasaranga at eight, they still have a penchant to Evan Goldbust, right? Like, they don't particularly throw their hands at it, right? They don't throw the kitchen sink at
it. They didn't hit a boundary for 10 overs today. I know a lot of that was conditions, but it wasn't all
conditions. And if you think about it, the batting did fail overall. barring Kamindu Mendes, who does get an opportunity or chance at 14, and he scores 44 of 19 and he bails them out of that situation. But I suppose one of their most important players in Hasaranga's absence becomes Mahesh Teekshana. He was great today. I thought he was the pick of the bowlers across both teams, yeah. Right? He was probably the best. Even in two power play overs, he goes for 1 for 9, takes a wicket and concedes 9 runs, and then ends with 3 for 23. So he's someone who you can use at the top and at the end as well. You can bowl death overs and power play overs, and that is quite a skill. He was even on a hat-trick today at one point, and he'll have to step up now if Hasaranga is indeed injured or out of the tournament.
I mean, I know we're almost finished with this, but I just finished. One good thing about Teekshana is his ability to bowl spin all the way through the game. And so when you bring another spinner into the side, we've seen this in the IPL and for Sri Lanka, if you bring another spinner in, they can be that sort of specialist middle-over spinner, right? You don't need someone like, you know, Dawson or Kuldeep, who has to bowl deep into the game, if you know what I mean. You're just like, no. You can just bowl from the 7th over to the 14th and we don't need to see you anymore, because Teekshana can do the heavy lifting. He can do the power play bowling and he can come back on at the end. So I think that's a big advantage for them in this situation, but he doesn't replace Hasaranga's batting.
I just think he'll need to step up now, and today he was the best bowler across both teams for me. And lastly, we spoke about the batting and bowling, but I do feel like Sri Lanka were also scrappy in the field. Sure, Ireland dropped 7, but like Paul Sterling was dropped by Kusal Mendes on 1 and he's the keeper, and then Ross Adair was dropped by Pathran on 14, so they'll have to be as kind of efficient in the field as possible, because this is not an easy group for them. The Zimbabwe game is going to be tough, especially if they've lost Hasaranga. Anyway, congratulations to Sri Lankan fans for bagging that first victory, and we really do hope that the Hasaranga injury is not serious. Now, on to the other two games, but before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Behram and Jared, and go nowhere, because we will be back shortly after this ad.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And I know a lot of you want us to discuss the England-Nepal game next, but because we want you to stick around, we're doing that one right at the end. Next up.
You're not supposed to tell people that, Behram. That's the thing that you keep for off air.
Fair enough. Anyway, in the first fixture of the day, New Zealand defeated Afghanistan by 5 wickets and 13 balls to spare at Chepauk. And it was an interesting game because, Jared, we know that Afghanistan have this template where they bat first, they try to set up a par total, and then they defend that total. But honestly, I was shocked not to see Noor Ahmed in the lineup. I know that Bracewell didn't feature for New Zealand either, and he was probably injured. But to my knowledge, Noor had no injury, and Jonathan Trott said that in hindsight, you can say these things, and he wasn't fitting the combination. I think he fits the combination. You can't not play Noor Ahmed. He plays his IPL cricket for Chennai. This is his home ground. It was a bit of a shocker for me.
Can I read you the full
quote? Yeah, sure.
So Prateep from Cricket by JB sent this through to us. He said, hindsight is always a nice thing, or dangerous thing as well. I don't think it was going to spin a huge amount as well. I know Noor has got experience playing here, but these are new wickets, so it's not like he would have bowled on them before. There is that, but there is all, but you always think whenever you lose, you wish you could have done things a little bit differently, don't you? Okay, and so Deepak has basically then put a message in the chat going, combination issue, that's why. What the fuck is a combination issue got to do with your best bowler not being picked for your
I swear.
Part? This is a horrendous decision by Afghanistan. He is their best bowler without any doubt at all. And they went into their first T20 World Cup game, a game that they absolutely had to win, and he was not playing. Yeah. I'm sorry, Behram. I like Trotty. This is just nonsense. It's just utter nonsense. Because Noor Ahmed doesn't even need spin.
True.
Right? His ability is to move the ball both ways. Look, you could. The only thing I would go back in their reasoning is that if you look at the side, I would say that the most likely player for him to play in ahead of is Mujib. Uh-huh. Right? Mujib actually had a really good game. He got the two early wickets. Maybe didn't come back as well afterwards, but I thought he bowled really, really well early on. And I think he was on a hat trick as well, wasn't he? Everyone in this tournament has been on a hat trick.
Romario Shepherd has bagged a hat trick as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so, look, I do understand the thinking behind that and everything else, right? But I'm sorry, you just, you know, you've just made a mistake. I would rather just go in with one less seamer, because I think Zaya Rahman, who is incredibly raw, I don't know if you've seen much of him bowl, but he's basically, he's like 90% elbows, this dude, right? Like, he reminds me of Ishan Sharma when Ishan Sharma had the giant Adam's apple, right? Like, even though I think he's older, I think he's actually not that young, but he looks like a really raw bowler. My memory of this game is that he didn't bowl in the power play anyway. So if he's not going to bowl in the power play and he's a seamer, right? Why not just use Noah Ahmed in that role and just see where the chips may... I'm just saying, Noah Ahmed has bowled on a lot of wickets in Chennai. He is the best bowler in that side. Come at me, Rashid Khan, right? Like, Rashid Khan used to be the greatest bowler in the world. I had no argument with that. Noah Ahmed is a better bowler than him right now, right? Fazal Haq Farooq, very good bowler. I really like Farooqi a lot. I like the way he bowls. Mujeeb, I love him in the power play, less so outside of the power play. Muhammad Nami is older than the two of us combined, right? And Omazai's fine, but Omazai needs the new ball and swing, and he needs a lot of things to go his way. But he's a fine fifth bowler, right? But that's what he is, a fine fifth bowler. So why would you not take in your best bowler? I'm sorry. I just think that's nonsense, all things considered. And I'd be looking at the fact that Rashid Khan went 1 for 36 here and thinking to myself, is Rashid Khan still a better bowler than Noor Ahmed? I just don't know if he is at the moment. Now, if you want to tell me that there's a little bit of batting there, that's fine. But what they needed was to be able to break through. But to go back to your original point, which I think is maybe the most important thing is here, this was a fascinating game at the start. And the fascinating part was that you have one team who doesn't want to score very much when they open the batting, and the other team that is desperate for new ball wickets. And so, you know, Matt Henry and Duffy, that's what they're in the side for, right? Is to take wickets with that new ball. And they didn't do it. And then I thought, you know, we've just poured shit on Trotty there, and hopefully I don't get a text message from him later. But on the other side, I thought sending Gulbuddin in was really interesting, because I think Lockie was on at that stage, or Lockie was about to come on, and I was like, well, you don't want Gulbuddin up against Lockie. And to be fair, I don't know if he scored that much off Lockie, but he hit everyone else, right? He did exactly what you wanted Gulbuddin to do. And also, the great thing about Gulbuddin as a player is he plays 100% for the situation every time, right? He just is, he has
he'll
no idea
what it's
like to
the ground for the situation. Yeah. He'll act it out for the situation.
Exactly. And so he allowed them to get back into a position. But I reckon they were about... Even with him smashing it, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I reckon they're about 71 for one or two. 71 for two they would have been at the end of 10 overs. That's not enough when the opposition has Seifert, Allen, Ravindra, Phillips, Chapman, Mitchell, Santner, Leesham, is it? Like, it's just not, you've just got to go quicker than that, I think, to start with. And then I think Afghanistan's best chance was to keep a lock on the strike rate. The run rate. They got the two wickets in the two balls from Mujeeb in the second over. But Seifert, even though he didn't have a great strike rate, it felt like he was keeping them above it. And then Glenn Phillips and Mark Chapman probably played the most important innings here, in that both of them just made sure that they were always above the rate. Phillips did it by whacking the ball. Chapman did it by hitting boundaries and scoring a lot of twos. And it just meant that Afghanistan could never put that kind of pressure on. So then what you needed was a strike bowler in the middle. If only they had the world's best strike bowler in the middle overs available to bowl for them. But no, he was watching
it. Well, I'll walk you through how I processed all of these things, because I woke up, I didn't even notice the lineups, right? I'm like, okay, Afghanistan have won the toss. Rashid Khan has obviously batted first, or opted to bat first over here, because this is what they do. They set totals and they want to defend them. So first up, They've gotten what they wanted. And then later I realized that Noor's not playing. And I haven't seen much of Zia Rahman. But then, to your point, currently, on current form, Noor Ahmed is their best bowler. Rashid Khan has had a stinker in this game. 1 for 36. Dropped Seifert's catch as well when Seifert was on 48. And he's been poor for a while. We did an entire piece on Rashid Khan during the IPL of how he'd lost his zing. And there are a bunch of things that he's doing differently now. And he's just... He looks like a shadow of his former self. So I was really confused as to why Noor Ahmed isn't there. I was also confused as to why Bracewell didn't start ahead of Nisham, but that was an injury thing. So I'm like, okay, whatever. And Afghanistan starts slow. I'm like, yeah, they do this. They anchor through the first 10 overs, and their power play score was 44 for 2. And at the 10-over mark, they were 72 for two. I was like, okay, now they've put themselves in a situation that even if they do exceptionally well, they get to 180. But then they do get to 180, right? 130 for three in 15 overs where they had started to accelerate.
Good hitting again and there by a bunch
182
of
for six in 20 overs. And I was like, okay. So now all of those things have happened that Afghanistan need to happen. They've gotten roughly a par total. And they would want to defend this. And I actually backed them to win this game initially. Because I went into a show with Saad on Pro Sports. And the last thing I saw was Mujeeb striking twice in his first over. And I was like, okay, 14 for two. This is over, right? Like, yeah. Surely Afghanistan will get them from here. And when I come back out, New Zealand need, like, run a ball, right? Like, they had killed the match to that point where they chased the target down in 17.5 overs. I mean, I think they were 151 for 4 in 15 overs when I came out of that podcast. So I think Afghanistan had just one template, which they continued to spam, and they got a lot of success out of that. But they are also playing old school cricket over here. They're playing like Pakistan of 2021. And that isn't going to work over here, especially when your bowling isn't as good as it used to be. Because Fazal Haq Farooqi isn't as hot these days as he was in 2024. He was one of the best seamers in that World Cup, right?
I actually thought he bowled a couple of good balls, but I think Seifert just spooked him.
Yeah.
So I thought he was bowling okay, and Seifert, I think, whacked him back down the ground. And then he came around the wicket, and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? You're swinging the ball. Just keep bowling the way you are. Seifert's as likely to miss the next one as he is to hit it for four. Once you come around the wicket, you take away your advantage. Yeah. Look, to be honest, a lot of this depends on how you still rate Rashid. Mm-hmm. But if Majeed's going to take early wickets and Rashid is bowling with Noor Ahmed at the other end, they can still score 180, right, and win games. They could still score under par and play the old Pakistan method, right? But you can't score under par if you're not going to pick your best strike ball.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. And as I said, with Zohra Rahman, look, there is a lot of talent there. I don't want to say, you know, he's I don't know how fast he is, but he looks reasonably fast. He's gangly. There's a lot of moving parts to his action. He comes wide on the crease. He might come off in this tournament and we might have to go, oh, that's fair enough. They had to fit him in. But their big tactic, if you look at what they used to do traditionally, was they would bat slow at the start. They would hit later on. And then when you were facing them, they would stagger Rashid Khan usually later in the innings so that you had to go through him and try and hit him really hard when you're already you're at the rate or slightly behind the rate, and then they would strangle you. Noor Ahmed I think it was like the 12th over today, and I was like watching it going, oh, this would be the absolute perfect time for him to come on. The absolute perfect time. And instead, I'm trying to remember when it was. You might remember this. When's the over that Nabi bowls?
So I think I was on the show at that point. But I checked the phase scores, and I think New Zealand paced the chase perfectly, like 52 for 2 in the power play. So despite losing early wickets, they don't completely slow down. At the 10-over mark, they're 92 for 3, Jared. Like, they only have to double up or less than double up from that point on. And when they're 151 for 4 and 15 overs, you know that they're just going to continue to whack it, because now they're thinking about the net run rate. And I found it incredible how, if you just look at Tim Seifert's innings, right? He starts off with a blinder. Yeah. He completely obliterates Fazal Haq Farooqi in the first over. Then he slows down. He gets to his 50 of 39 balls. That's not a quick 50. And then as soon as he gets to 50, he just tees off, right? Ends up with 65 of 42. Mm. So he's the glue that holds that innings together. Hence why he probably bagged player of the match. But it's the other guys who accelerate more. The Phillips and Santners and all of those boys. Chapman.
Oh, I was going to say, there's four of them. I think Phillips and Chapman, who we talked about before, are the two most important, because they did keep it going at the tricky time. But then Mitchell does the same thing, and then Santner does the same thing. But I just want to go back. Remember when I said the 13th over?
Yeah.
Right? The 13th over, Mohammad Nabi bowls one over in this game. .664. Wicket two. Yep. That 18-run over is basically what takes it from almost 10 runs and over down to 8 runs and over. And it's the game.
And that wicket is the Seifert wicket, right? I'm pretty sure it's the Seifert wicket.
I'd have to go back and have a look. Yeah.
Do you know what happens exactly before that over? That's where Rashid Khan drops an easy chance off Tim Seifert on 48. So he takes that catch and things change. But I agree with you that drop catch is probably not as big a concern as Rashid Khan's form. Is he done? Will he come back? Will he ever get to those levels that he once was, you know, enjoying? Like, on current form, I would have picked Hasaranga over Rashid Khan any day, for instance. And now he's injured, so that's not applicable anymore. But I was on a draft at Pro Sports the other day, a T20 World Cup draft. And I was thinking to myself, if I need to go for a wrist spin, I'd probably go Hasaranga over Rashid because Kuldeep and Varun were already gone. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah, no, look, it's I have no problem with him playing in this side. I don't want to be sitting here going that they lost this game because of Rashid Khan, because he gives them batting as well, right? But what they specifically
he didn't use himself, Jared. He's the captain and he never came out to bat. Why did they send Darvesh Rasooli?
Yeah, I know, but
they sent Darvesh Rasooli to bat at the death where they've got Umar Zai, Nabi and Rashid Khan. That's stupid. I know Rasooli does all right. Rasooli scores 20 off 13.
Yeah.
But it's still stupid.
I don't know. I thought that was really interesting too, actually, just coming back on it. I mean, it was one of those things where I was watching going, I thought, you know when you think a different batter is out there? And then after a while, you're like, wait a minute, have I missed another wicket? Like, did someone else come out? And I realized that in my head, I just assumed someone else would come. So there's obviously a reason. Look, Rasooli can play. And maybe if he's going to play, he has to bat up the order. But he doesn't seem to be a dasher if you look at his record overall. But yeah, anyway, just in international bowling, it'd be very fascinating to see if how many overs Mohammad Nabi can give them anymore. My memory was that he's struggling a little bit in the last couple of years to control economy, and that he's only played a couple of games this year. I can't find his numbers here at the moment, but he's only played a couple of games this year and he can't bowl. Mohammad Nabi, if he can't bowl, is a very different player, right? It's only one game in the World Cup. Actually, have I got it here? I might have it here. Wait. This year he's played four games and he's bowled five overs. So his numbers are terrible. I'm not worried about his numbers. I'm worried about the fact he's not bowling any overs. Because when they're really good, Nabi can get them two, three, and four overs when needed.
Yeah.
Right? And if he's not that bowler anymore, then again. But the problem with Nabi and Rashid Khan at the moment, I'm not saying either of them are done or finished, but neither of them are strike bowlers. Yeah. Right? They're both now defensive bowlers. Rashid Khan's been a defensive bowler for quite some time now, right? And that's absolutely fine when you can't score off Rashid Khan at all. If you are in a situation where you can chip him around and you do that and then wait for the odd bad ball without Noor Ahmed at the other end, it's a completely different system. And Mujeeb doesn't come back particularly well in those later overs either. I just think there's a lot going on. To be fair to Afghanistan, Rashid has been bowling a lot better for them than he has been in some of the other leagues. So there might be... And do you know who hasn't been bowling brilliantly for them? Nor Ahmed. So this could be one of those situations where they've just looked at international form, whereas actually they probably needed to look at overall.
Also, I do believe that, sure, Chepauk wicket won't spin as much as you think it used to, and it must be a fresh wicket and all of that. But your strength is still spin. You back your strength, right? And New Zealand are a decent team playing spin, but that's where you could catch them. And I feel like you kind of handed it a plate or the game on a plate to them where you pick the wrong lineup and then you don't go as hard in the power play in the first 10 overs as you should have. And it's the approach of Afghanistan that really bothers me. The one positive thing was Gulbuddin, actually. I was really surprised that they promoted him to first drop. And he plays a solid knock. It's a better 50 than Tim Seifert. 29 ball 50 and 63 of 35. Across all counts, it's a better 50 than Seifert, right? Like,
I went and watched it again on MV Play and I was like, I still can't believe he scored the way he did in this innings, but there's a beautiful hitting towards the end. Can I give, I don't want to say conspiracy, but can I give maybe one extra reason why Noor might not have been playing? Is it possible that they saw how Daryl Mitchell played Kuldeep?
Well, Daryl Mitchell loves to scoop Kuldeep. I don't know if you've picked up on this, but whenever Kuldeep bowls outside the leg stump, Mitchell sets himself up in a way that he can scoop him off his hips. Not going all the way down. Yeah. That's what he does.
Because he can't go out off that ball because his body's in the way and he can't be bowled and he can't be out LBW. But usually what he does is he takes a step down and then hits Kuldeep back over his head. Kuldeep starts bowling outside leg stump because he can't bowl on off stump to Daryl Mitchell, his normal delivery, right? I wonder if that was... And again, is that just overthinking cricket a little bit, right? I think Jake might have said this actually when we were chatting about this. He might have actually said, are people just overthinking cricket? Like, who is your best bowler at the moment? Who is most likely to take wickets? And it makes more sense to do that. But look, Afghanistan still gave themselves a chance to win this game. When it came down to it, you know, as you said, they hit their way back into it. but they couldn't take enough consistent wickets all the way through. It's going to be a tough tournament for them if the second seamer doesn't stand up and they have to use all this spin, and if Nabi does and Rashid can't find form. Like, even having Noor and Mujeeb in his current form in the side, that's probably not enough if you're not going to score power.
Yeah, and plus they've got all these bowlers who love bowling in the power play. Mujeeb, Umrzai and Fazal Farooqi. So how do you manage those three? And one more thing I'd like to mention over here is a lot of people who would have watched this game will go back to the drop catch of Tim Seifert that Rashid Khan let go of. But I don't think that's why Afghanistan lost this game. I mean, New Zealand also dropped a catch. I think it was Finn Allen who dropped Gurbaz on 7. But what it comes down to is that Afghanistan's methods are a bit traditional now. They're a bit outdated and they can't chase either. So you are literally leaving only one way of winning. Yeah. And you're even losing doing that. And that is a concern. And you know, New Zealand are also a team who have some reliability to them. They've got power hitters now. They're not Kane Williamsoning it anymore, right? They've grown from that. And Mitch Santner is in the form of his life. He scores some valuable runs, none for 23 and 4 overs with the ball. And I feel like the biggest reliability factor New Zealand might have is Matt Hendry with the new ball. You know he'll bowl 3 solid new ball overs for you. That's what he does today. None for 18 and 3 overs. And he ends up with 1 for 27. So you've got these players who you know that 8 days out of 10, you'll get good performances from. Which what makes them a pretty strong team, I think. I would have them as semi-finalists as well because they get the weaker Super 8 group.
Maybe because of the group. But I just don't know if Jimmy Neesham's having to bowl that many overs, that you are a legitimate chance to put pressure on the top sides. I think that would be the biggest issue. They don't trust their second spinner, Phillips and Ravindra. What, by the way, like what happened today for Ravindra to be bowling like the 17th or 18th over? We haven't even talked about that.
I think they just lost faith in Jacob Duffy.
Yeah, maybe. But I also think sometimes they just lose count. Like, losing count is the wrong way of putting it. But I think sometimes they believe that they can get... Because they've done it. I've seen Phillips bowl for them at the death. I've seen Daryl Mitchell bowl for them at the death. Sometimes they're just like, anyone could do this job. And it's like, I'm not sure they can. They got away with it with Ravindra. I think he got hit for 6 and then got a wicket next ball. He could have gone for like 4 sixes in that over. But you're right. But that's another issue is Duffy and Henry. Like, so they don't want to use Lockie at the death. By the way, Lockie's figures don't look good today.
I mean, he comes into that power play bowling that 6th over and he gets the wicket, right? 2 wickets in the same over. So I thought he was quite good. And a slow one is quite good, man. It's quite deceptive.
That's what I was saying. I was happy with Lockie today, but his figures don't show that. But a lot of that was, you know, Gulbuddin swinging wildly, I suppose, as well. But when it comes down to it, Duffy is not a death bowler, right? If he's not a death bowler against Afghanistan, I'm not sure he's a death bowler against Hardik Pandya or, you know, Joss Butler or whoever the hell is in at the end from one of the good teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And Afghanistan still have an opportunity to fight their way back into this tournament because if they beat South Africa, then their chances of qualification for the Super 8 stage probably take a boost. But other than that, I feel like it's just a weaker team than what we saw in 2024, all things considered. And let's see how they fare later on. Still one more game to discuss, but before that, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Behram and Jared, and go nowhere because we will be back very, very shortly.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Jared and Behram, and the best part of the podcast has finally arrived. What a thriller, a nail-biting thriller that we witnessed at the 1K day today. England managed to defeat Nepal by 5 runs in the end, or 4 runs rather in the end. So Nepal, you know, they were agonizingly short of England's target, but they gave us a lot of memories. They pretty much came as close to winning as the Netherlands did versus Pakistan the other day. And this is the beauty of T20 cricket. This is how you grow the sport. Now, Nepal don't really get to play a lot, which is what Gargi over here says in the Super Chat as well. She says, big shout out to Nepal. This is the only way these teams get to play bigger teams. T20 World Cup definitely needs to be every 2 years. I feel that the 20-team format really works. And now you have four groups with five teams in it, five teams per group. And it's wonderful to see how across these 2 days, even though the weaker sides and associate teams haven't actually won a game, they've really pushed the big teams forward. And England really looked like they'd bottled this, right? And it wasn't even a bottle. It was Lokesh just going mad.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they played really good cricket all the way through. They probably had a couple of moments, and I probably watch a lot more of Nepal than most people have, because I find them a fascinating side, and they seem to play in good time zones, if you know what I mean. Like, I turn on the TV, turn on a random
stream. Why are they called the Cardia Kids?
I don't know.
That's their nickname.
But, I mean, I've found them fascinating the whole time I've been watching them. They probably lost this game with the Will Jacks moment at the end that we didn't really realize was going to be as big a deal as it was. I thought their spinners did very well. They kept themselves in it. They're not a very good new bowling team, but it wasn't a new ball bowling team, sorry. But it wasn't as if England got massively away from them at any point. I thought they regularly took wickets and kept themselves near and there, thereabouts. Probably the fact that they lost the two senior players when they were in front looked like it was enough to lose them the game. But as you said, then Lokesh came in and he's probably, I'll be honest, he's basically a scoop away from winning this game, because if he'd played more cricket or if he was a more rounded batter, he would have just scooped one of Sam Curran's balls and Sam Curran couldn't have just kept bowling the same delivery over and over again.
Because they had short fine leg and short third, right? So surely it would have been a boundary. But I remember early in the day, of course.
Also, Curran was saying, I'm only going to bowl Yorkers. Yeah. Everyone knew that was going
to
be
We'll come to Sam Curran in a bit, but when I was watching this game live, my entire family was kind of surrounded around the TV because, you know, Nepal is about to beat England. This is going to be a great day. And, one point, once Podell and Airy got out, and I think both of those guys played really, really well, especially Airy, everyone thought that, okay, it might be over now. But then 45 runs were required in 3 overs. And my brother walks in. He had just lost a cricket game of his own. And he says, oh, so they basically need 20 runs in this over and this will be back on again. I was like, yeah, you are saying the truth. And that's exactly what happens. Joffrey's taken apart for 21 runs in that over. Now we're all seated. We're like, okay, this can be done. 10 runs off the last over. At that point, you really thought the Nepal are going to win this. We were preparing for the emergency podcast. I was calling you. I wasn't able to get a hold of you. And finally, I did. And then they lost.
It's because I hung up on you because the game was still on.
Well, I mean, Lokesh was one hell of a hitter, man. Like, I had no idea that these guys can, and especially Lokesh, I don't even know of. At least I know about Podell and Airy, right? He showed us some exceptional hitting talent, and I feel like Nepal were a whisker away. Had they gotten more exposure over the years, right? And had they been in these situations a bit more, even in bilateral cricket, I think they could have probably pulled through.
Honestly, as I said, they play a lot of... I've seen 20 or 30 limited overs games that they've played in. Almost every one of them comes down to last over. I would say they have more experience in a last over than most franchise cricketers ever have. I don't know what it is about Nepal, but all their games come down to the end. So I don't think it's that. As I said, I think it's as simple as Lokesh obviously can whack the ball down the ground, and either he just thought eventually Sam Curran was going to miss, or he doesn't have the shot, the scoop. Because if he has the scoop, he does Sam Curran in on one of those. And unfortunately, that's probably what it came down to. I think the big story from England's point of view, and we can come back to Nepal in a minute, but the big story from England's point of view is probably Rashid Khan.
You mean Adil Rashid?
About how I was. Oh yeah, God.
Rashid Khan is living in your head right now, buddy.
Apparently, all these old leg spinners I've got all these issues with, and I can't even. Hasaranga, I'm thinking about his hip as well. Adil Rashid. So I was worried about him coming into the tournament, obviously, partly because of the fact that he bowls a little bit slower. And in India, his numbers always say that he struggles a little bit. There'll be a piece up on the Substack today if you want to go have a look. But we talked about it there, about how even when he's not bowling against India, he struggles on the slower wickets in India than he does anywhere else. I think he goes run and over more in India than anywhere else. But also, he averages 22 around the world, 35 in India. Right? Like, it's a big difference. And this is in the 2016 World Cup. This is this game today and against India. He's played against India like 4 times outside of India and does better against them outside of India than in India. So I think this is a legitimate problem that he has. And look at the way that Nepal played him today. Like, there was a shot from I want to say it was an airy. I know it's in my piece. I've now forgotten. Where he it's a sort of shot that you cannot play on a quicker wicket because he waits for the ball to sort of come to him under his eyes and then he waits for it to spin away so he can drive it on the angle. And I think that's the issue with Adil Rashid. It's so slow that you can play that kind of shot. You really shouldn't be having an associate cricket play you inside out through the gap at cover for four for power in the way. And I know Airy's a freak hitter of the ball, but even so, that was not a ball that you would expect a normal player, even a very good player of spin, to be able to play that. But because it comes that little bit slower, it allows you that. So I think England have got away with this, but there are massive questions over them. I thought, Jofra had a very weird game. He got hit early on and then he got hit later on. Luke Wood bowled a really, really poor over to allow them back in it. And Adil Rashid didn't bowl very well. So they'll be happy with Sam Curran. I did think that the pitch just suited the kind of bowler Sam Curran was more than anyone else. But they'll be happy with Sam Curran. I think, did Dawson go okay? I think he went okay, didn't he?
And I think Dawson was England's best bowler, right? 2 for 21 across his four overs. Yeah. And all he did was bowl with control and good accuracy, right?
Yep.
In the same area over and over again. He even bowled a power play over, taking a wicket and giving away 6 runs. But he was going to be, or what I thought would be the difference between both teams, after which Nepal come back again, courtesy of Lokesh's hitting.
Yep.
And, you know, Dawson has been a fringe player for England, even a World Cup winner in that team as well back in 2019, right? I don't think he was there in the 2022 T20 World Cup team, but...
So, I've got a stat for you if you want. BBC said this today. Henry Moran said this. This is technically Dawson's 5th World Cup. I think one of those World Cups, he was reserve and was never added to the squad. But he's travelled with England for 5 World Cups. And this was his first game in a World Cup, is what they said on BBC. I haven't fact-checked that, so go and find Henry Moran if he's wrong. But that kind of, because it was funny, because Stephen Finn, I was listening to the commentary for a minute while I was doing something on the radio. Stephen Finn was going on about his first game, and I was like, can that possibly have been his first game in a World Cup? Because I know I've seen him at World Cups. I've literally seen him at events, right? And I was trying to work it out, and then I was like, but I can't remember a single game he's ever played it. So maybe they are right. So, well done for him for waiting all this time, a thorough professional. The other bowler I was going to mention, was Will Jacks, who did exactly what you want Will Jacks to do today, right? Like, he gets away with 2 overs. He gets a wicket in one of them as well. But they have a lot of issues with their bowling at the moment. Adil Rashid not bowling out against Nepal on a wicket where Lamichane goes for what? Run a ball and takes two?
No, Lamichane was 1 for 25. And he did all right, but of course, I think Nepal will need a bit more from him in terms of wickets if they are to do
something. No, they will, but I'm saying if the opposition wrist spinner is bowling that spell and Adil Rashid's bowling 3 overs for 42 and not being able to be used again, that's a huge concern.
I mean, I think England's bowling overall is a huge concern because I thought they were going to rely heavily on Jofra and Adil Rashid and both got obliterated, particularly Adil Rashid, right? But at least, they've got some positives because Liam Dawson showed us that he can be a very reliable sort of slow left armer, and 2 for 21 are fantastic figures. Also, I mean, we have to give some flowers to Sam Curran here, right? 1 for 27, including the death over, the last over of the innings where he defends 10. So he does well. And I do agree with you. It was just the sort of pitch that suited him generally. But also, let's not forget, Jared, this was the same pitch that India played on yesterday, but it was watered. So it played out a bit better. And Harry Brook does kind of luck out, I feel, at the toss as well, because England's best bet over here is that they're setting a total and just scoring too many runs for Nepal. I feel like if they were batting second and if the conditions slowed down, knowing how England counters spin, that could have been a big issue.
It's interesting. Look, I think that's interesting. Look, Nepal, we did a team maps piece. It hasn't come out yet. We had some technical issues with it, but it has been made. And in it, I talk about how rounded Nepal is. And Mark Machado sent me a message after a few of this game going, can they bat? And I said, they're actually about the same at batting as they are at bowling. That's not very common for any teams, but it's not something that you normally see with associates. And I talked about it in the piece as well. If you look at Nepal, one of the more interesting things about them as a cricket team is that they bat quite deep. They have multiple bowling options. They're probably a genuine seam ashore. Karan Kasee is a very good player. Has been a very good player for them, but he's 34-year-old seamer now, and he was never quick.
There was a moment in between, I'm interjecting, but death over, it was Curran versus Curran. I don't know if you caught that.
But again, he's a very good cricketer to have in, coming in at number eight. Like he's a proper whacker of the ball. He's a clever bowler and everything else. Like they're a really good, solid side. And they beat the West Indies recently. The biggest problem they've had is just consistency.
Yeah.
They don't play. You watch them in a game, and I'll watch them against like UAE or, you know, well, actually UAE is a good side, but like, I want to say Kuwait. Like, I'll watch them against Kuwait or someone random. And they'll go between looking like a test team and looking like a club team. And if you go back, that's what Afghanistan used to be like, right? So that usually tells you that they've got a very high end, but they haven't worked out the professionalism. The last year, I felt like they've been building towards something a little bit better. And, you know, as I said, they don't have a great new ball seamer, but they do have a very good new ball spinner. So that pairs it up a little bit more. I really like their side.
How'd you find the debutant? Very first delivery in international cricket, Sher Mala removes Phil Salt. Later then he drops Tom Batten off his own bowling and goes for plenty. But I mean, that was kind of exciting. I do think that, you know, it is a bowling attack which is heavily reliant on Sandeep Lamachane. And he takes 1 for 25. He doesn't do poorly. But they are a better batting team now in my eyes than a bowling team because there's some firepower over there. Even Burtel was playing well up top. Then
I think that just depends on the wickets, though, mate. I think we will see situations where the wickets will suit them. So here's my big thing with them. I think they were set up to be a good team in Sri Lanka. I don't think they're set up to be a good team in India. But the wicket they got was kind of in the middle, so it did suit them a little bit. Because some of their other spinners can bowl. You probably didn't see them in their best conditions. I think they're still about a 50-50 side. I think it's one of the skills that they have. I really like the debutant, to go back to you. He just freaked out a bit, right? Once things weren't going his way, he freaked out a little bit. But if you look at what he was doing, there's no reason why he can't have an Aryan Dutt type of season, World Cup for them.
And you know, I think he also kind of gets hard done by because Jacob Bethel walks in and he's just someone who plays spin brilliantly. And I feel like Bethel's going to be really important for England because the ease with which he was hitting spin, and I know this was Nepal or whatever, but he's really good at rocking back and pulling. I feel like that's his favorite shot. Yep. And he does that over and over again in the same innings and bags a 28 ball 50, ultimately ends with 55 of 35 in his World Cup debut game, T20 World Cup debut game. And then Brooks scores 53 of 32 as well. But the difference really comes down to Will Jacks. He's the difference between both teams. Because if he doesn't score that unbeaten 39 of 18 and then doesn't take 1 for 17 in 2 overs, England lose this.
Yeah.
And at that point, when the first innings has ended, you're not thinking about Will Jacks. You're thinking about Brooke and Bethel. But Will Jacks is the one who plays the most crucial part. And once again, he is slotted in at number 7. England love to play Will Jacks at number 7, don't they?
They love to play Will Jacks in positions that he's not very good at. No, sorry, not very good at is the wrong term. That he's not used to doing. I think that's the thing with England. They're just like, Will Jacks can do anything. And Will Jacks is like, well, actually, guys, I think you're fine. I'm a top order player part-time. They're like, Will Jacks can do
Will
anything.
Will Jacks is our new Moeen Ali. That's what they're thinking, right? Yeah. Essentially. But I mean,
so
it's an interesting side.
Look, good on him. Terrible hairdo. Yeah. Terrible hair color. Although, I mean,
tell me who has the worst haircut. Paul Van Meekeren, Cooper Connolly, or Will Jacks?
I think Will Jacks, for me, it was just, it's too white, isn't it?
It's interesting. I shouldn't really say this on air, but I was saying in the group today that Will Jacks has the sort of face that I just would not recognize outside of a cricket setting. Like, I could be sat with Will Jacks on an airplane and I probably wouldn't recognize Will Jacks, but he's a super talented player.
There's plenty of those players.
Very, very talented.
Yeah, there's plenty of those players. By the way, we didn't get to talk about this before, but we're pretty much finished with this game. Great work by Nepal. We really enjoyed it, but they didn't win. That was sad. But I just want to say that, like, I think I put this in the group. Ireland's opening batting combination I don't even know. Do you know what it is? It's the most club opening batting thing I've ever seen because Paul Sterling has always looked like a club cricketer who tries to slog and then plays beautiful cover drives, right? Like a proper club cricketer. He has one shot where he's great and everything else where you're like, what the hell is this? What's this guy doing? And Ross Adair looks like what he is, which is someone who was playing another sport, has come back to cricket. Like, he could not look less like a cricketer, Ross Adair. There's nothing he can ever do to look like a cricketer. He's just built like a rugby player and he's going to continue to do that. But he's really, really fit. But then you watch him bat and like some of the shots are like, have you seen cricket before? Like, what are you trying to do? Like, it's like everything. It's like watching a 50-year-old who likes to hit things really hard play tennis for the first time. But it's like, I don't know how to play tennis, but I do know how to hit things hard and I'm going to do that. It's if you get a chance this tournament, just watch them because you got just madness. I said, Eek was doing something else. I put him into the room. I said, trust me, watch three overs. He was on the floor laughing. He's like, I wouldn't play these shots. And I went, I know.
It was really funny. I thought like, okay, clearly this guy doesn't have the technique, but he's managing to whack it. So this is fun. And
he's got great hand eye coordination. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously a great athlete. Wouldn't he be one of the last people to have played top level sport in cricket? I know Alex Carey is another one.
Wayne Madsen is captaining Italy, and he's played field hockey for South Africa.
Yeah, Wayne Madsen's another really good one. I forgot about him. So there aren't that many. I know Namibia has had some in the past, and obviously there's some women ones. You know, Elise Perry and Susie Bates are still around, but there aren't that many people who have the ability to do that. So I respect Ross Adair so much, but it does look like every time he's batting, he's trying to pull the head off a chicken. Have a look at it. It's all bottom hand. It's,
And I mean, he couldn't smash a broken Hasaranga either. So that's that. Anyway, we're done with reviewing all three games, but we've got a few super chats over here, Jared. So if we could go with the speed round, perhaps. We've got Prudvi, who says, I always think T20 World Cups would be boring because how often we have them, but this World Cup started with all bangers. I guess T20s are the great equalizer. It does bridge the gap, T20 cricket, between the better sides and the weaker sides, because there are lesser overs and there's a lot of volatility to the format. And I feel like they finally got the format right.
The Nepal slogging, right? Like, Lakesh gets going. It's harder to do that in one-day cricket because you have to do that over an hour rather than over four hours.
Also, the T20 World Cup for the longest time had a weird format where you would have the preliminary round first and then the big boys arrived. This just works way better. I'm so happy that the first 2 days have been this entertaining because we haven't really been able to take our eyes off the screen. It's been that good. All right, we've got Anish up next who says, if India were to lose any match, how will they lose? I mean, it probably has to come later in the tournament because I feel like they're a really good team. But
I think Jew can play a part. I think it's one. I think they're going really hard with the bat. They are due one, pardon the pun, they are due one actual violent collapse. Yeah. So there's always a chance of a very violent collapse where, you know, I mean, Sky almost pushed the ball back to the bowler, right? Like, well, he did push it back. He was dropped. So if they have a violent collapse, there's always a chance. But Jew and that are probably the third one I would add is day-night game and you come in under lights and there's a, you know, the ball just nips around a bit more than you're ready for and catches
you. I feel like the most likely one would be Dew because we've seen a lot of Dew in India and whatever home cricket India have played in the recent past. But if I am planning against India, what I would tell my team is that rather than trying to set a total and failing to do so and only have India end you in the power play, in their batting power play, let's try to perhaps bowl first and get 3 to 4 power play wickets. And that could be a way to flow them.
Yeah.
That's how I would plan against them.
I think generally in cricket, you should decide to bowl first and get 4 power play wickets. It's pretty stupid, other teams haven't thought about
that. If you think about it, India...
Yeah. I get it. Next question. We've answered it.
Chasing 170, they'll end the game before you've taken your first breath, right? Anyway.
Oh, is that it?
No. There are a few more ones. Prudvi once again says, did you see those bars for each player? Control, innovation, intent, wicket threat, etc. with a rating beside them. I love how obviously made up they are. So we've been told that CricWiz has partnered up with the ICC to bring those numbers to you. Although I have no idea how much intelligence has gone into this and whether those numbers make sense.
Didn't it? But Ali Khan, they had as like a medium pacer by pace, right? So clearly, I don't... we've actually done this. Remember, I did this with Glenn McGrath. And I wanted to go through it because I wanted to see if there was a way of like coming up with it like for a video game, the way that FIFA does it and the way that NBA 2K and these sorts of games do it. And so we actually have a piece half made. So I would probably make it during this World Cup now because these I've done. But you can't get it right. I just don't know... I could see what they're trying to do. I think if you're going to do something like this, you really need to commit to it. And you probably need people to watch video as well as just looking at data. And it feels to me, based on what I've seen so far, it is just based on the data. And maybe, especially with players you don't have as much data on, it doesn't make sense. I don't know. But Ali Khan is way quicker than he should have been. And some of them are a bit random as well. But I think it's a really good... This is how younger people understand sport. This is... overdue. Yeah.
Not finish overs. That's just wrong. But I like the...
Let's finish overs.
I like the concept of those rating things or bars. But I do feel like, you know, they look a bit half-baked and I'm not always trusting them. Anyway, Ali Sayed with the next super chat says, catching played a large part in all the losses. That's true, man. Max O'Dowd dropped the game versus Pakistan. Sky was dropped by USA and they dropped two other catches. Ireland dropped like... 7 catches if you count the half chances as well. What else do we have? Afghanistan, Rashid Khan drops.
You've made your point. There was, he's right. Ali is right. Catching played a large part. There's been lots of them. We definitely
all right then. Next up, we've got the Bug Catcher. Says, great to catch you guys live. Also, great analysis as usual. I happened to watch Crick Buzz yesterday after a while where Tiwari said that Sky is better than AB de Villiers. Made me crave for some good analysis. All right, thanks for the praise, buddy. I'm happy that we are of service. Not
ideal, is it? I mean, Sky's fantastic, but he didn't do it over as long a period. Maybe his peak is very similar to AB's, but I wouldn't have thought over a long period of time. You would compare
AB de Villiers is one of the best batters to play the sport, right? Across formats. So even if you just take T20s.
Yeah. Oh, if it's across, I mean, he wouldn't be talking
if it's just T20s,
formats,
I do agree that Sky is an anomaly, but AB de Villiers is the first cricketer who's made 360 degree play mainstream, and he's done it so successfully and at such a high rate. So I don't think there's any comparison over there. All right. We've got Messi fanboy who says, P-Dog granted after India's moral defeat that they won't win the World Cup as you need an anchor in the top three in modern T20 and they don't have one thoughts. I was having this conversation with Robbie the other day, Jared, and he's convinced that all you need in the power play is 45 to 50 runs and the first 8 overs are to set a base, which is different to how Varun thinks, for instance, where he just wants to attack in the power play. And I suppose that there is like, there are two different schools of thoughts within India as well with respect to how T20 cricket should be played.
Was there, between the 2007 win and the 2024 win, I would have thought India had that lineup over and over again. Why didn't they win World Cups then? Come on now. It's not how it's played. It's not how it's played. I love, like, you know, I don't know Prasanna very well, but he seems like a very smart guy. Robbie's a very smart guy. Abhishek can have two good games in this tournament and India will win the World Cup, right? It's as simple as that. You cannot catch these guys.
And if you post any sort of total, they could completely end you at the start of the second innings, which is why I would bowl first and go for the 3-4 power play wickets. Anyway, Laughing at Nothing says, would a T20 Super League with multiple tiers make sense to develop for all the associate teams as they are becoming way more competitive? I think that's a fantastic idea, but it's hard to execute, isn't it?
It just doesn't fit. And also with the freelance cricket and franchise cricket and everything else now, it doesn't fit, sadly. There'll be less international bilateral T20 played in the future rather than more, I would say. So these players, what will happen is these really good associate players will start to play franchise cricket, and that's how they'll get good, the same that happens in football.
And hopefully there's a bit more structure around franchise cricket because it's all a bit too random right now with overlapping windows and whatnot. But it's tough, right? The calendar is packed. The Bug Catcher is back with another generous super chat. Thank you so much, buddy. Guys, you have some super chats on the Good Areas channel too. Oh, all of them come to us over here, so don't worry about that.
Yeah, we're on StreamYard, so it just...
I didn't realize until later you were here primarily. Great analysis as usual, by the way. Also surprised you hasn't played much role yet. So thank you once again. And I'm also a bit surprised.
Very early. They haven't made many games in
Yeah, they haven't.
Realistically. True. So early on in the tournament. You know, we'll keep going.
All right. Next, we've got Avi Pandey who says, why is Dubey not part of the bad haircut discussion? You're right. I'll take the L. He definitely needs to be paired up with Will Jacks, Cooper Connolly, and Paul Van Meekeren. Because Paul Van Meekeren is going for a faded mullet, but the lines are just weird. Have you seen it? It's just not proportional.
I've seen it. Paul's a nice guy and also might occasionally watch this channel.
I'm
if I get a message because you're slagging him off, I'm going to forward your number
Paul,
to you.
Paul, if you're watching this, I don't care how good or bad your haircut is. What matters is that you were brilliant bowling those cutters at hard length. I really like the way you bowl.
He didn't say that. He off air said you're so bullshit.
All right. Siddharth Srikanth asks, I should start watching cricket, I guess. Not sure. You should do it. We would recommend. Thank you for your money as well.
Not sure. I'm not sure what that...
Yeah, Abhi Sharma also has a request or a wish list. He says, I want USA to beat Pakistan. You must have had a really good 2024 because that happened.
Yeah. We've already beat there. There was a great... I think it was... oh my God, I've forgotten his name. But the Pakistani-American actor who's in the Marvel movies.
Yeah, Sagar Sheikh?
No, Kumali...
Kumail Nanjiani? The guy who's on The Great Cricketer.
That's who I meant. Yeah, he has a great bit on one of the shows, on one of the chat shows, right? Where he's just like, you don't understand that all we have is cricket and you beat us at cricket and none of you know that you've beaten us at cricket, which is like the one. And like, I've heard people make that argument before, but it was like, it was so perfectly, you know, he's a professional comedian, obviously, and a great writer, but it was great.
Anyway, Inoncia says, irrelevant question. Jared, you came to Delhi for Virat's book. Did you try his favorite Rama ke Chole Bature in Delhi? Did you?
Is that the, if that's the street food one, then yes. Sorry, I don't remember the names. We need Cheyenne on this one. I went to his favorite Western restaurant and I went to his favorite street food restaurant where him and Ishant quite often go to. That Western restaurant was fine. Like, it was a really good quality. I enjoyed it. But the street food one was some of the best food I've ever eaten in my life. And it was absolutely packed and the owner was really nice. And I think Cheyenne interviewed the owner. So, yeah, if that's the one that you're talking about, it's like on a corner and everyone sort of eats outside undercover.
If
it's not that one, then
he's
no.
He's given up Chole Bature from what I know because he's gone full vegan and he's very conscious about his diet. But I'm glad you guys got to make the trip over there, if it is, in fact, the same one. Bugcatcher with another generous super chat. What a legend. He says, okay, I think Ish Sodhi takes the worst haircut award, according to me. I kind of like Ish Sodhi's hair, man. It's got this weird rock star, 80 rock star thing going on.
I mean, usually this would be like my major subject, but I just feel like I don't have enough opinions on players' hairs today. I'm sorry to everyone. I feel like I've let you all down. This is the man that once wrote a 7,000 word article on fast bowlers' hair for Cricket Info, and I didn't know that that's what this episode was going to be
about. This is the man who just changed his own haircut and has gone long hair, full on.
I have not changed my hair at all. It just hasn't been done.
Yeah, well, You're
so obsessed. You're very obsessed with hair,
I am quite obsessed, especially with your hair, because now you have these videos popping up on Instagram without the hat and that long hair coming down. I'm like, oh, that's definitely a change of energy. Anyway, that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much for your interactions and for your super chats as well. We really do appreciate them. And we will see you soon once again tomorrow. These shows will be daily. Different people will pop up to talk about the day's play after the last game is over. And yeah, have a good one. Enjoy yourselves. Follow Combox everywhere. Like, share, and subscribe. And have a good one. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.